You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It's Wednesday, and that means it's time to talk our state's history.
The United Nations considers a war stopped even more important than a war won.
If our cities go down, in my opinion, our nation will go down.
You have to think about your dream and what you want to do.
All we were trying to do was just get music for all people.
With 8 hospitals and a medical school named in his honor, many southeastern Michiganders are pretty familiar with the name William Beaumont. But just what did the doctor do to acquire such acclaim in the world of medicine? Joining us now to give us some insight is state archivist with the Michigan History Center, Mark Harvey, and U of M medical historian and PBS NewsHour contributor, Dr. Howard Markell. Dr. Markell, when and where did William Beaumont's medical career get its start?
Well, it begins in the early 1800s, and then he joined the United States Army as an Army surgeon. He actually saw some action in the War of 1812. He resigned his commission in 1815 to try his hand at practice, and by 1820 he was back in the United States Army as a military surgeon assigned to Fort Michilimackinac.
Mark, what was life like in northern Michigan near the Straits of Mackinac in 1820?
Well, Michigan had only been a territory since 1805. This is a region where the French and British had been fighting for control of back into the 18th century. So there's no bridge, there's no roads. Transportation was via water. It wasn't accurately mapped yet. The General Land Office surveys had begun in 1816, and it would take 100 years to complete them for the state. So if you looked at maps at the time, this was more a general area than anything else, not specifically defined. But the Straits area, particularly the island, had long been a commercial center for the fur trade, and the American John Jacob Astor came on the scene, a hugely successful businessman, and really capitalized on that, extending the market and growing the fur trade even more on the island. It was truly a commercial crossroads.
Mark, it was this fur-trapping way of life which led Dr. William Beaumont to cross paths with one Alexis Saint-Martin in June of 1822. How'd they meet?
So there was a large annual pelt swap meet. Saint-Martin was there on site waiting to make some trades, and what actually happened was an accidental discharge of his weapon at close proximity to him. Beaumont was on the scene. He rushed to his aid and was able to administer first aid. I mean, there's graphic descriptions of what happened, but the end result was he miraculously did not die. Beaumont's quick action saved him, but he was left with a gaping wound.
All right, let's talk about this, Howard. What did Dr. Beaumont find when he first came to the side of this wounded trapper?
Well, a great deal of blood and a lot of screaming people, but there were several fractured ribs that Alexis incurred. His diaphragm was lacerated, and there was this gaping wound where parts of his stomach and his lung were sticking out. And so it was quite a disastrous muzzle gunshot wound.
Mm. So Saint-Martin did not die. He lived with this fistula, this direct opening into his stomach. How was that possible, especially in the days before antibiotics? How was he not done in by infection?
It's a miracle. And, you know, it took several years before that fistula was healed in a way that we would feel safe with it today, I should say. And he lived with either Dr. Beaumont or in a boarding house for quite a few years and couldn't eat. He had a lot of issues going on and a lot of need for daily treatment until the skin grew enough to form a sort of a rim or a circle around that wound, and he did not die of infection. It's incredible. There's no antibiotics. There's no anesthetics. There's nothing but bandages and wound care.
And we're talking stomach contents, and we know that's not very sanitary. It is. It's an amazing story. When did Dr. Beaumont realize there was something more that he could learn from this accident that Saint-Martin had?
Well, he first realized in about 1822 when he administered a medication into his stomach through the fistula that no one in the history of medicine, no doctor had ever given medicine in this manner. People have swallowed medicine. There are suppositories very early in the history of medicine. There are not yet injections at that point because you don't have hypodermic needles. And people rub things on their skin, but nobody actually administered medication through the stomach. Now, another thing is that the stomach and how it digested food, how the digestive tract worked, was a complete mystery to human beings at that time. And it was something that fascinated doctors all the way back to Hippocrates and probably earlier. There was some process called a coction, where the stomach was an oven, a crucible, that somehow cooked the food so that you could digest it and use the nutrition and then develop the waste products that we all know so well. And no one really quite knew, because no one had an internal view while the motor was running, so to speak.
This was the ultimate look at the running engine.
It was the ultimate look. And then about a year later, when Saint-Martin could tolerate food, he started to administer food into the stomach itself through the fistula. He always tied it to a silk string because he found that the digestive juices, the gastric juices, as they called it, did not dissolve the string. And then he would take notes on what the stomach did and how these food products, meat, you know, boiled beef, mutton, vegetables, cabbage, you name it, and he would take very careful detailed notes of how the stomach digested its food.
And ultimately, in 1833, Dr. Beaumont publishes his famous book, Experiments and Observations on the Gastric Juice and the Physiology of Digestion. What was the medical world's reaction?
Well, they loved it. I don't know what the Amazon score was back then, but it did rather well. But it took a while. It took about 10 or 20 years before doctors were clutching that book to their chests and reading about it because, you know, information simply didn't travel as quickly as it does today. And there weren't the forms of journals or medical reporting that we benefit from today. And in fact, most discoveries were published as books or monographs. And it was published by a small publisher in the United States. And so it took some time to get around, to get translated. But soon enough, various physiologists and scientists, such as Claude Bernard of Paris, one of the founders of modern physiology, called it one of the great medical discoveries of humankind. And this so-called backwoods physiologist, as he was called, because he was. Talking about backwoods. He had described something that no one else had heretofore described.
Now, you write in the Journal of the American Medical Association, clearly Beaumont and Saint-Martin's was a complex relationship consisting of more than sympathy and science. Talk about this relationship of theirs.
It was complicated.
It's complicated.
Because here you have a patient and a doctor. Okay, so Dr. Beaumont is treating this fistula. And then he realizes that he has a living laboratory in front of him. And of course, there's not just the love of science, but there's ambition to discover something and put one's name on it. And after a while, Saint-Martin said, I've had it. I don't want to do this anymore. And so he ran away. And Beaumont chased him through even further backwoods of Canada, because that's where Saint-Martin was from, and then convinced him at various points to allow him to do further studies. That's why the book wasn't published till 1833. And in fact, Beaumont had a sequel plan, but it never came to be. Finally, when Saint-Martin died, his family did not want anyone else to take advantage by exhuming his body or studying him postmortem. And so they let the body stay out in the open for several days until it completely decomposed and smelled even worse than his stomach contents did on that fateful day.
As I believe you wrote, they couldn't even let the coffin into the church.
No.
Okay.
It was horrible.
And how did Dr. Beaumont's life play out?
Well, it played out rather well. I mean, he then later went into private practice, and he wound up his life in St. Louis, Missouri, and he was championed as one of the great medical researchers of the 19th century, and he remains so to this day.
So, Mark, what is the story behind the fact that Dr. William Beaumont's name is on so many hospitals and buildings in Southeast Michigan today?
Well, part of it's just because he was really renowned in Michigan and Southeast Michigan in particular. More practical, I think it was September 2015, the newly reorganized Beaumont Health System renamed all the different campuses that came under that banner for consistency. So hospitals like Botsford and Oakwood came into the fold. Also, the system has dozens of community medical centers, home services, hospice care. Also, the medical school at Oakland University bears Beaumont's name. But it's far-reaching. There's the medical center in Texas for the Army, the William Beaumont Military Medical Center. So I think you could argue that Beaumont's name is one of the most commonly used, especially in Southeast Michigan, that has a low general public awareness of why. Until now.
And now we know. Dr. William Beaumont, a name from Michigan's past, continuing to live right through to the present. Dr. William Beaumont died on this day 165 years ago. And a big thanks to the State Archivist with the Michigan History Center, Mark Harvey, and U of M medical historian and PBS NewsHour contributor, Dr. Howard Markell, for today's lesson in Michigan history. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.